Welcome into the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm your host, Grayson Grunhafer, and today I am here with Levi Caraway as we talk some Baylor baseball. The Bears are actually on a pretty good run right now, winning a couple series in Big 12 play back-to-back. Really just kind of riding a little bit of momentum here. They're currently 19-13 on the year, 7-5 in Big 12 play, and the RPI is sitting at 39. A really important two-week stretch here, Levi, that has really gotten them back into contention, really. And I know D1 Baseball had them in the tournament in their initial bracket preview, and they're still kind of floating around that. But how important has these past couple weeks been for the team?
Yeah, it's been huge. These series wins over BYU and Houston. I believe this is the second time in Mitch's tenure that they've won back-to-back Big 12 series. So that's pretty awesome. And then in the past, like, they've really struggled just to take care of business against teams that they were better than on paper. So I was hoping for like 4-2 across these two series. And the fact that they went 5-1, played really well in Houston. BYU, they didn't play as well, but they got the job done. They took care of business, and now they're right back in the thick of things, right where they need to be. And if you would have said they're 19-13 and 7-5 in Big 12 play at April 9th, like 3 months ago, I think everybody would have signed up for that.
They're right in line with my prediction before the season. I'm still in play here. They're still kind of just right on the bubble at this point. But, you know, one interesting development that I saw this past week that's really been key, and I think was probably the reason that they won these past two series. You know, their offense has been largely focused on three guys, Janicek, Sanders, and Armstrong. I mean, those three guys have carried whatever offense they have, which has not been great as we kind of thought it would be going into the year. But welcome back, Ty Johnson. He had a really, really good run these past 2 weeks. 7 of his 14 RBIs have come in the last 5, 8 of his 22 hits on the season as well. How important is it for him to get going, and how much could he kind of flip the season potentially for Baylor's offense?
Yeah, and that was a major question mark that I had going into this year, and it was largely going to kind of determine how deep their lineup was going to be, was because Ty Johnson in 2024 was awesome. Hit above 300 first year after transferring from MCC to Baylor, was really one of the best players on the roster. And then last year just did not have that same success. Hit around 250, if I remember correctly. Really struggled just to put the ball in play consistently. Not a ton of strong contact. And this year we were hoping that he could regain that 2024 form. It didn't look like that for the first half of the season, but these last few weeks, he's really picked it up. And that's been awesome to see, because like you said, like, the bottom of the lineup for Baylor has been really hit or miss kind of this season. And if they can get a guy like that and potentially move him up, I know they put him in the two hole here these last couple games. So if you can get one more guy that you trust, one more guy that can put the ball in play consistently, he's a threat on the base paths. He's a veteran. He's been there before, fifth year senior. So if you can have more people that you can trust that are performing well, especially as we get to the home stretch of the season, I mean, that's a huge, huge thing for Mitch Thompson right now.
If I told you coming into the season that Pearson Reebok would be as bad as he has been this year, what would you have said about this offense?
If you would have told me Reebok was hitting like 190 or whatever it is, I would have been like, they're going to be probably worse in the Big 12. And they are, numbers wise, they're pretty much down there in a lot of different categories. I think for him, though, he broke a finger after getting hit by a pitch against Texas in mid to late February. And I think he just has not been the same since then. I believe he only missed 3 or 4 games. So he's been playing through that. Not sure what the status of that is right now, but obviously that can completely impact your swing, and it can really derail a season if you never really get healthy at the plate. And this program, this team, just in a position where you just kind of have to throw him out there and just hope he performs well, because you don't have the guys that can come in for him. And obviously last year as a all Big 12 freshman, I mean, he's a really good player. I think when he gets healthy, there's not a doubt in my mind that he'll rebound back to hitting close to 300. It's just unfortunate that they're in a position where they're having to kind of trot him out there, and he's clearly not himself right now.
Yeah, it's been unfortunate, because I do think, like, you don't need, you know, 8 guys to be hitting really well. You don't need that. Like, if you can have five guys in your lineup that you really trust, you feel pretty good. And, you know, you were expecting Johnson and Reebok to be part of the trio that I mentioned at the top, and it just hasn't happened. And so I do think those are two guys that are kind of important guys to monitor down the stretch, because how they do with runners in scoring position, how they do with just getting on base is going to be very important. A couple of other guys that I like their game, but just need a little more consistency are Brighton Clements and Hunter Snow. Those are two guys that I think could also be pretty impactful during this stretch run, but it's just been up and down completely. And there's other guys on the roster that have, you know, shown some flashes, but a lot of just ups and downs, a lot of kind of things being left on the table, runs being left on the table. So I'm just curious how that all plays out, because I still feel pretty good about the trio of Janusek, Sanders, and Armstrong.
Me too. And I mean, those were kind of the things that we expected coming into the year, was when you're going to be relying on so many guys who have little to no experience. I mean, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, and there's been a lot of downs here this season with the lineup in particular. And it's kind of the same issues that they had last year with the strikeouts and with not performing well with runners in scoring position. And I think the biggest thing is, like, we know, I mean, this lineup is not going to jump from 13 or 14th in the Big 12 to 5 or 6 overnight. But just the key is going to be putting the ball in play with runners in scoring position and just getting, causing havoc on the base pass and drawing walks. Cause I mean, they have a ton of really good athletes who can steal a ton of bags. And they've shown that in games when they're getting on base consistently, that they can be a problem. They're a nightmare for, I wouldn't say like a nightmare, but, you know, they're a problem for opposing catchers and pitchers to deal with. But the biggest thing is just getting guys on base and getting guys over, putting the ball in play, because good things happen when you put the ball in play. And so far this season, there's only been 2 or 3 guys who have done that consistently. If you can stretch it out to 5, 6, 7 guys you trust, even if you're second to last in the conference in batting average, I mean, you're going to be able to put runs on the board. This is college baseball. It's not the MLB. Guys are going to make mistakes in the field. So that's just part of it. And so while, yeah, you can kind of be down and out on the lineup maybe overall, if they're just consistently putting the ball in play, I think good things will happen.
So moving to the pitching side of things, like, Lucas Davenport has really been awesome this year. He's really put all together. He had a dominant performance, I believe, against BYU. I think that was the 12 strikeout performance. But yeah, he's been really, really good. Ethan Calder's been steady, sturdy. Like, I would say for your Sunday guy, he's been really good, and it's probably very smart to have him slotted in there. And then you're just kind of taking your lumps on Saturday with Zach Wallace, but he's even shown some signs here and there, I would say, of kind of figuring some things out. What have you seen from that starting rotation? I just want to reiterate here, this has been a heck of a coaching job, because they were supposed to have Mason Green, who got hurt at the very beginning of the year. He was going to be a big part of kind of this rotation. They have Stefan Stahl, who was kind of, after Green got hurt, potentially going to be part of this rotation as well. Mm-hmm. They've lost both those guys basically for the whole season. How have you seen them kind of figure it out? And really, you know, specifically, you know, this trio, Davenport, Wallace, Calder, what are you seeing from those guys right now heading into this backstretch?
Yeah, first and foremost, I think even with all the kind of having to put Wallace on Saturdays, having to put Calder on Sundays, even though maybe that he was an all Big 12 reliever in 2024. So I think ideally he would have been put back into that role this spring. But what Sean Snedeker has been able to do, just kind of putting these pieces together, has been an awesome coaching job. I believe they're third in the Big 12 in ERA and some other stats like that. And that's really impressive. And I think this is easily the best, even with all those kind of makeshift pieces, this is easily the best weekend rotation that Mitch Thompson's had in his 4-year tenure. Lucas Davenport, and he missed some starts with some shoulder soreness. And so he's developing into like a legitimate Friday guy. That's been awesome to see. I mean, he has some nasty stuff, and he obviously had an incredible offseason, and he's just racking up the punch outs and not putting guys on base. And even the few hits that he does allow are always kind of fluky, it seems like. But he's been a revelation for Baylor on Fridays. And who would have thought that Baylor would have been a Friday night team coming into the year, because they've been so bad on Friday nights in recent seasons. And then, yeah, Zach Wallace, I mean, he was one of Baylor's best bullpen arms, kind of had been thrown into the weekend rotation here recently since Stefan Stahl's been hurt. And while we're on Stefan Stahl, I'll provide y'all with an update on what Mitch said this morning. He said, there's no update right now. It's not good right now. So he was, he exited the game after, I believe he recorded only an out or two on Friday. Never a good sign for a pitcher. And he had already missed a month, and then they had kind of worked him back up to hopefully. And I doubt he would have been put back in the rotation at this point in the season with how much time he missed. But obviously, he would have been a really key arm out of the bullpen. So that's a tough blow for Baylor because he was awesome earlier in the year filling in for Lucas Davenport on Fridays. I believe he only allowed one run against Ole Miss and Oregon State in back-to-back Fridays. had double digit strikeouts. So, you know, at this point, you kind of have to go down that road. Is do you redshirt him? Do you save him for next year? I would imagine those conversations will start to be held here pretty soon. But yeah, Wallace, I think the most impressive thing about him to me is he just battles. I mean, there's very few guys at this level. I don't want to say few guys, but that I've seen here recently, maybe in the Big 12 that I've watched closely, who when they allow three runs in the first inning, they can just mentally bounce back, go back out there and throw four scoreless innings. And he has that ability. He's given up some hits here or there, but he's a dog on the mound. And I really enjoy watching him pitch. And then, yeah, Ethan Calder just kind of been steady Eddie on Sundays. I think ideally he would have been in that bullpen role this year, but I think he's been awesome on Sundays. And he, every time Baylor needs him, against West Virginia, against Houston, he went a season long seven innings, was awesome. Against BYU, Baylor ended up winning that game 3-1 in the finale, and they needed that rubber match. I mean, if you lose the series at BYU, you're probably out of the tournament race the rest of the way. And he just delivered an absolute gem. I believe he went six innings, only allowed a run. So he was awesome, and he's been great all year. So really impressed with the weekend rotation, what they've been able to do, even though you've had so many guys in and out of there. And Cade Hansen obviously not working out from Wisconsin Whitewater.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be kind of a factor in that as well, as kind of a potential, mm-hmm. you know, third guy in the weekend rotation. He's been kind of unplayable. And so you put him in there, you lose Mason Green, you're having to move Ethan Calder up, you lose Stefan Stahl. I mean, the fact that, I mean, Sned has been so good the last 2 years. He's been really the saving grace for this Baylor baseball program. The fact that he's been able to get this pitching staff to be this good with those many problems, those many things going wrong, guys moving into different roles than they were expected to be. It's been really impressive to watch. I think you mentioned Calder being a rotation guy. I think it's been big that Caleb Bunch has been so good, because mm-hmm. I do think he's kind of offset the fact that Calder is no longer in that role. Bunch has kind of stepped up to be that guy. And I'm not necessarily sure that that was the expectation coming into the year. I think we heard a lot of different names. You know, Grayson Murray was a name that popped up. There were, you know, a few other guys, RJ Rui, who's actually pitched pretty well, but, you know, a bunch of other names. And I don't know that Bunch was the first name that came to mind. And he's been really good in that relief and closer role.
Yeah, I know this kind of got lost in the shuffle last year because they struggled down the stretch, but they really had a pretty awesome three-headed monster in the back end of the pen with Gabe Craig, Caleb Bunch, and Grayson Murray, and Will Glatch before he got hurt, so I guess four-headed monster. But anyway, you didn't really get to see that many times because they weren't playing super close, meaningful games. But Caleb Bunch has picked up right where he left off last year. He's been incredible. He's looking like he's going to have an all-Big 12 season. Let's see what the batting average against is, because nobody makes 164. Guys are hitting 164 against him. ERA 1.23, 1.05 whip. I mean, he's been awesome. Grayson Murray has kind of had a bit of a struggle. He has not been able to similarly do what Bunch did, where he just kind of carried over from last season. And so I know Mitch and Coach Sned really trust Murray, and they're going to keep throwing him out there and hoping that he can just kind of figure it out. But his command has just not been as sharp as it was last year. And so when his command's off, he gets hit a little more when he's just trying to throw stuff over the strike zone. But yeah, I mean, I still overall, I don't think the bullpen has as much depth as you'd like, but they still have some really strong pieces back there.
Yeah, they do. Specifically, who are some of the names that you like that have really kind of emerged in the bullpen? The ones that I've seen just kind of glancing, you know, whether it's Wallace or Atkinson or RJ Rui or McLeod, like it seems like they have options. But who are the ones that you feel like they're trusting the most in these kind of big high leverage moments?
Yeah, definitely Bunch. I think Charlie Atkinson is growing into that role. The DBU transfer barely pitched last year. I'm not even sure if he threw an inning or two with the Patriots. So he's been a great addition. I believe he might have been the only D1 transfer portal pitcher that they added over the offseason, off the top of my head.
He's been good.
He's been really good, yeah. Luke McLeod's been really well. He's done really well. He's a freshman. ERA 1.84, 1.3 whip, and 14 and a two-thirds. That's incredible numbers for a freshman. And then RJ Rui, he's a lefty specialist. This is a guy, I believe he, I don't know what system they're using, but he grades out as one of like the best pitchers, like stuff wise. Mm-hmm. And he's been pretty good. Only a 0.98 whip. Batters are hitting 207 against him. That's great. And then Braden Bergman's coming along. I know he was a high profile recruit in that 2024 class. He's had a lot of injuries, missed most of his senior year of high school. Not sure that he's ever going to be like a starter quality guy, but he's developing into a really trusted bullpen arm when he's throwing strikes. I mean, that's the key. Because his command can still kind of be a little iffy, but when he's throwing strikes, I mean, he's pretty tough to hit.
Okay, let's look at this schedule, Levi. So, like I mentioned at the top, Baylor's 19-13, 7-5 in Big 12 play. RPI sitting at 39, pretty strong actually at this point in the season. And so, schedule wise, they go to Cincinnati this weekend, who is currently 22-13, 4-8 in the Big 12. And you might not think those numbers are very impressive. Obviously, the 4-8 it kind of stands out, but their RPI is at 22. They're actually one of the three best teams in the Big 12 when it comes to RPI, along with West Virginia and UCF. Those are actually been the three RPI's, favorite teams. You got a midweek against UTSA, which is RPI 36, and Baylor lost to them pretty bad early in the year. So I think there'll be a little bit of redemption on the mind. Then you got TCU, whose RPI is sitting at 28. So that's kind of your stretch coming up here. Your really important stretch, and a stretch that could define the season. I mean, if you're able to win one of these series, get out of one of these series with maybe just, you're able to get a win in the other series, come out of it 3-3, and then you beat UTSA in the midweek, that's actually what I would think is a really positive result if they're able to get that. Now, that's easier said than done.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this upcoming stretch here in these next 3 weeks is likely going to define the season. Whether that means this team is playing for something in May, whether that means they're completely out of the hunt for the tournament, or whether they're still kind of hanging on that bubble. We're going to find out here in these next couple of weeks. I think starting with Cincinnati, they've struggled here in recent weeks, and this is going to be a road series. So they're going to be fighting because they're on the bubble, similar to Baylor. A lot of Big 12 teams are all kind of in that. You have like the ASU, UCF, and West Virginia, and then you have probably six or seven, eight teams like all right there, kind of jumbled in the middle. So anybody can beat anybody. Obviously, you never expect to win a road series against a team that's probably better than you on paper. But yeah, I wouldn't rule that out. You got to win one this weekend, and then the TCU and ASU series are going to be huge as well. The way I kind of game this out, just purely looking at those three Big 12 series, if you win two games or less, you're probably out. If you go 3-6, you're probably hanging on by a thread. But if you can win four games, you're right where you need to be. And I know 4-5 is like, oh, you're below 500, but that's two road series against two pretty solid teams, and then a home series against your biggest rival. So it's going to be a really interesting stretch. I'm excited to see kind of the mental makeup of this team because they've gone out and done what they were supposed to do against BYU and Houston, but now you got to take that on the road to some really quality opponents and Cincy at ASU and then at home against TCU.
And they really also just need to find a way to not lose these midweek games. I mean, UTSA would be an acceptable one, but you can't drop one to Sam Houston or UT Arlington. Like, you got to find ways to win those games. Texas State at the end of the year as well. Their RPI is pretty good. So you have some opportunities in there as well to pick up some RPI boosters in the midweek. Yeah, so again, it's at Cincy, TCU, at Arizona State, Texas Tech, at UCF, at Utah at the end of the year. So a very interesting stretch coming up. I will say this, as you get towards the end of the season, Tech's RPI is 107. They're having a terrible year. Kind of shocking how bad they've fallen off, given how good some of their other athletic sports have been. You get UCF, who right now, it's them in West Virginia as the best team in the Big 12, I think RPI wise and just eye test wise. And then you get Utah, who's not very good either. Their RPI is at 92. That's probably going to drop even more as we get closer to the end of the season. So, like you mentioned, this 3 week stretch really important because your opportunities towards the end of the year kind of go away some. I mean, obviously, if you beat UCF, that would be a big one, but that's a huge if. So lots of opportunities still remaining. Also, lots of winnable series and winnable games because there's so many teams that are very equal right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I see it, I don't think, this is just kind of me thinking ahead. I don't think Baylor would make the tournament if they win four Big 12 series, with those being over BYU, Houston, Tech, and Utah. I think you would need five series wins. You probably need 15 to 17 regular season wins in that range. And so for me, that means you got to take care of business against Tech and Utah. So you got to win four or five games out of those two series. And then you're not going to be expected to win at Cincy or at ASU, but you can get swept. So if those things go according to plan, that leaves the TCU and the UCF series, and you pretty much have to win one of those two series, in my opinion, to make the tournament. I mean, I guess there's a chance they could still kind of be on the bubble somewhere going into the Big 12 tournament, and you never know what can happen there. But in my opinion, you kind of got to put up or shut up in one of those two series, and you got to beat a good team at your house, and just put it all together for one weekend. So it's going to be really interesting last 2 months, but I think there's definitely, or last month and a half, but I definitely think there's a path to the NCAA tournament. They just gotta win, keep winning games.
Yeah, and I mean the way Baylor's played against TCU in pretty much every sport, and I assume it's been the same in baseball. I'm sure they've struggled there against the Horned Frogs. It's gonna be really interesting to see if they can get that done. Again, you mentioned there's a very vulnerable team coming up this weekend in Cincinnati. They've struggled and Baylor's playing well. So, I mean, if you can just roll this hot streak in there and win a series against the Cincinnati team, and if you can win a midweek against UTSA, I mean, you could be looking at, by this time next week, at a team that's kind of their RPI is probably inside the top, maybe even top 30 at that point. If you get, if you go 3-3-1 during this stretch, so a lot can change in a week. It could put them safely off the bubble at least for a week, if they're able to get that done. So it'd be a very important stretch here. Overall, I mean, we've talked about Mitch Thompson a lot. We've talked about this program a lot. We've had concerns. I know you coming into the year not very optimistic, which is very reasonable, I feel like. What would you say, kind of at this point, just taking a glance at this? We're more than halfway through the season. Have they met your expectations? Are they below your expectations? Are you happily surprised? Just kind of where are you at from a mindset of this team at this point?
That's a great question. I would say I'm pleasantly surprised with aspects of the team. I think they've done a fantastic job on the mound, all things considered. I think there's still a lot to be desired at the plate. I think that's something that will need to be addressed here in the off season. Whether that's spending more money to bring guys in, because we haven't really seen them use the portal that much under Mitch's tenure. So they're gonna have to figure something out there. I think as long as you can keep Sean Snedeker in Waco, I think you can feel really good about that pitching staff. But lineup wise, I mean, whether that's bringing talent in or whatever, that's something that will need to be focused on in the off season. But for this season, I've been pleasantly surprised for the most part. I think the lineup struggling as much as it had has kind of limited what their ceiling can be. Because that's kind of, they scored what, 5 runs against UTA. They lost to Tarleton the previous week. I mean, they're not exactly putting up runs against teams that they should be beating. So that's kind of been an issue. So I'm very pleased with the pitching. I'm on the lineup. I think Travis Sanders has been awesome. Brady Janiszek's been awesome. Tyce Armstrong's been everything you could have wanted from him. But everything else, yeah, it's kind of been a bit up of a up and down season. So I think for this program, I think putting yourself in contention to make the NCAA tournament is a great next step. I mean, obviously with the transfer portal era, I don't think it should take 4 years to even put yourself in those conversations. But I think you can finally start to see things are trending in the right direction. And so it'll be an important off season. I mean, regardless of what happens over this next month and a half, whether you make the tournament or not, I mean, you're going to have to keep Brady Janiszek in a Baylor uniform. You're still going to have to replace a lot of talent in the lineups. You're going to have to get guys in. I think they do have a good amount coming back on the mound, but you still got to supplement that, whether that be through JUCOs or the portal or freshmen or whatever. So I think things are trending in the right direction. I wish it hadn't taken 3.5 years to get to this point. But yeah, I like what I've seen for the most part.
Very fair, and a lot of young guys stepping up. So there's definitely some optimism about what the future could look like if you can keep a lot of those guys in Waco for the future. Well, Levi, I think as we go forward in the season, if they continue to win some games, we might have to talk a little bit more about this team and about kind of where they're heading, especially if they're able to get a series win over Cincinnati and beat UTSA in the midweek. We might have to talk about them here in a week, but we'll see how that goes. It's been an interesting year. It's been a fun year. It's one of those seasons that you're kind of like, hey, you finally see a little bit of optimism. You're hoping that they can just sneak into a regional and just, let the chips fall where they may. But we'll see how it all plays out. Thanks for joining this week, Levi. I really appreciate it. And everybody, thanks for listening. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.
Join Sikkim 365 Premium on a $1 for 1 month trial to read our experts' notes and insights. Know about high school commits, off-season transfers, coaching staff changes, and so much more before the rest. Also, download the Sikkim 365 app on your iPhone today to get instant notifications of breaking news, read up on the latest inside info, easily interact with other Baylor fans on our forums, and get alerts for anything published by your favorite staff members.